Hello. So I'm hoping to teach you guys some Swana words as I go along. So first word, dumela, means hi. So dumela. This trip was amazing. I just got back Friday afternoon, so I'm really tired. And that makes me very emotional, so if I cry, just ignore it. But you know, God's on my side. He'll help me. Help me out, so. I had a very different experience this time. I got to see a totally different part of Africa. 'Cause I went there last year for 3 months, and I really got to know some people. But this time, I feel like every time you go, you get to know the culture a little more. And it's funny because the way that they live, their culture and religion kind of get messy. They can't separate them from each other. So it's really hard for them to accept a religion and get rid of all their culture, because that's what you're asking them to do, in a sense. Which is very different from here. So, here, there's so many cultures, right? That you almost have to convince them that what they're looking for and what's missing in their life is a hunger and thirst for Jesus. You don't have to convince them there. They know there's a hunger and a thirst. And they come to you asking, do you know the right answer? You're like, yes, I do. But it's really hard for them to walk it out. So I got to see more and more of that being a part of the church there. I got to see the youth and the kids just raising up in the church. And it's really cool because the last Sunday that I was there, there was 120 kids at Kids Ministry. And we did two outreaches with the team there that he was talking about. And that brought in a lot of kids. And so we're hoping to keep that number up. And it's crazy because I think there's like 10 adults attending. And there's 120 kids. So the youth is twice as big as the adults as well. So their kids ministry and their youth ministry is just continuing to grow. And their goal is to just raise them up the right way so that they can start being the leaders of the church. They can start being those adults that are coming every Sunday. So it's really cool to walk beside them and start to get to know the youth more and more. And even the kids that I saw last time to say hi. A lot of the kids don't know English yet, but I had pictures. So I was like, this was me. Do you remember? Especially because I had dreads last time. So nobody recognized me this time. But another thing that's a little different in Africa is the demonic activity is a little different. Not saying that there's more than here. But it's shown in a different way, and the people react in a different way. So here, I feel like a lot of people deny the demonic activity, especially non-Christians. They see it and they have a word for it. Anything. They try to call it something in the name of science. I don't know. But there, they know it's something spiritual. They're like, okay, I need to go to a witch doctor. And you're like, wait, wait a second. There's something better. But it's funny, actually, I was looking it up, and I was looking up the popular religions in America, and Christianity is one of the top ones, as well as Catholic and another different type of Christianity. And after those, there's just nothing. There's a huge percentage that is just called nothing particular. So they're not atheists. It's not like they don't believe in God, but they just deny their spirituality in every single way. So I thought that was interesting because you don't ever get that in South Africa. They know that there's a spiritual realm. They know that they're fighting spiritual battles. So it's very interesting. Be patient with me, sorry. but their culture, it reminded me of the story in Luke 9, 57, when a man came up to Jesus and he said, I wanna follow you. I'm ready to follow you. And he goes, okay, come with me. He's like, let me bury my father. He's like, no, leave your father, come with me. He's like, okay, let me say goodbye to my family. And he's like, just stay with your family then. You know, in other words, I'm paraphrasing it. but that's kind of what it is like there. It's very hard for them to let go of those things because they know they're hungry and they're thirsty. And that's what's so exciting about going there is that you see the hunger and you see the thirst. And you're like, I have the answer for you. And he's amazing and he loves you. But it's the discipleship that's really hard. It's the everyday and living with them and making sure they're coming to church and learning about Jesus and learning how to walk with Jesus. That's really interesting. So, I mean, last time I was there, God really spoke to me about discipleship. And I think it's exactly for that reason, because I saw that's what they had to battle against, was discipling everybody. Because you can save everybody, but if you save them and you leave them alone, they're kind of just sitting there with no knowledge and no teacher, and they don't know what to do. So it's a big part there, and a big part of that ministry there that we went and saw. So another thing about America is it seems like they're getting way too comfortable with satanic worship here. Like, it's nothing. Like, it's actually gonna help you, you know? That's what I'm hearing more and more here. There, they know that satanic worship exists, but they do not worship Satan. You will actually get killed if they find out that you worship Satan. But their fear causes them to surrender to demonic activity and oppression. So I want to talk about fear a little bit and what that looks like more. What I learned there is that fear is faith in the wrong place. And especially there, because they say, I believe in God, but I believe that this situation is bigger than God. And that's fear. And that's all their reactions. And so when they hear something that's very common is they hear voices. They hear voices in their head and they think it's their ancestors. And the ancestors will tell them what to do. And they know it's bad because they just do it. Because they know they're afraid that if they don't do it, that something bad will happen to them. So it's because of fear that they fall into this oppression from that spiritual warfare. But let's look at 2 Timothy 1:7. As Christians, we know, for God gave us a spirit not of fear, but of power and love and self-control. We know that we do not have a spirit of fear. That is not in our spirit. That is not your identity. And when you know that, you shouldn't have a problem with that. You can walk in love, you can walk in power, and you can walk in self-control. You can look at those situations and know that that's not gonna harm you because you have self-control, you have power, and you have love. And you are made perfect in love. So let's go straight to Proverbs 29:25. It says, fear of man will prove to be a snare, But whoever trusts in the Lord is kept safe. So this verse, perfect transition to what I want to talk about, is trusting God. So my question to you is, do you fully trust God? I want you to have an answer in your head. You don't need to say it out loud. But answer that question. Do you fully trust God? Okay? Even in the storms, even in your every situation, even in the waiting periods, when you don't know what to do, even in your mind, sometimes those thoughts that you can't control, do you fully trust God? That's what I'm asking. Okay? So I had a conversation with God before Africa, and he asked me, do you trust me? And I said, yes. And it was over a certain situation. I was like, I trust you with this. I know you can do this. As long as it's done within this year, I'm good. And he's like, okay. Well, he didn't say okay, but I thought he said okay. Then I went to Africa, and, you know, being tired and jet-lagged and doing something every single day, it's really wearing on your body. And when your body is tired, your mind starts to go all over the place sometimes. And so I was getting pretty stressed out, especially because I'm an English speaker. And we were making plans with the church, and we were trying to plan the upcoming Sunday. And all of a sudden, they're talking in their language, and they all look at me. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. Are you expecting me to know it? They're like, just do it. You're ready. And I was like, ready to do what? What do you want me to do? I have no idea what I'm doing. So I was getting pretty stressed out because it was like a go, 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 and then do it. I'm like, do what? It was a lot. But I had a conversation with God, and I was like, okay, God, how do I fix this? What is happening? And then he was like, well, do you trust me? And I was like, that's not what we're talking about. This is the wrong conversation we're having. It's like, this has nothing to do with it. He's like, no, but you're afraid. You're afraid that you're going to fail because you don't know what's happening. He's like, why are you afraid? And I was like, I don't know. He's like, kind of like that situation. You said you trusted me, but you didn't. I was like, but I did. I thought I did. And he's like, but you didn't trust me with the timing. You gave me a time limit. And I was like, okay. So I learned my lesson. But my point is, when you don't trust God fully, you put parameters around him. And you leave him in a box. And need to learn to not have parameters. I know it's comfortable. It can be very comfortable in a box because you know exactly what's going to happen, especially for my planners in here. Who's a planner? Yeah, I like plans. But God has his own plan. So if you want to turn to me, with me to Joshua 6, 1 through 5, we're going to read part of the story of Jericho and what God said to Joshua. So it says, now the gates of Jericho were securely barred because of the Israelites. No one went out and no one came in. Then the Lord said to Joshua, see, I've delivered Jericho into your hands, along with its king and its fighting men. March around the city once with all the armed men. Do this for 6 days. Have 7 priests carry trumpets of ram's horn in front of the ark. On the 7th day, march around the city 7 times, with the priest blowing the trumpets. When you hear them sound a long blast on the trumpets, have the whole army give a loud shout. Then the wall of the city will collapse, and the army will go up, and everyone straight in it. So I want to give you some context of Joshua. This was his, I believe this was his first battle as leader. So this is intense, okay? Can you imagine him going in front of thousands of soldiers, ready to fight, prepared to fight? They've been sharpening their swords. They've been sharpening their spears. They've been making shields, whatever they did to prepare. They were preparing to fight. And he goes, well, you're not gonna fight. You're gonna march and shout really loud. So that doesn't make sense, does it? Not in that context. I can imagine the soldiers are like, are you sure? Are you sure we're not fighting? I can imagine Joshua probably thought that God was gonna tell him, you know, blow up each corner, then get a tank and get ready to ram it in the gates. And then I will deliver Jericho to you. That seems way more reasonable to me. I mean, not to me, I'm not a soldier, so I like God's plan. But for these soldiers, for them, this was difficult. This was not what they were expecting. It didn't make sense. It didn't make sense at all. But it's in these impossible situations that God moves. And that might look different for everybody, depending on their understanding. So let's first read Proverbs 3:5. It says, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. Right? It's a great verse. I hear it a lot. It's difficult though. So let's bring it to the context of Joshua and the fall of Jericho. For the soldiers, it was really hard to march around, I can imagine. But for somebody else, maybe there wasn't a bunch of soldiers. Maybe God would have asked, I need you to go to the king and give a peace treaty. You know, sign a peace treaty. Make amends with him. Maybe for somebody, that was hard. That would have been hard. That would have been hard for me if I had a lot of hatred in my heart towards this leader in Jericho. I feel like a lot of people in America or everywhere can have hatred for somebody and not want to do God's plan sometimes. So it can look like many different situations. It's not specifically for Joshua or Jericho. This is what God did for Joshua, and this is how it happened. But expands, think of all the different situations that God could use that don't make sense to you. Most of them don't make sense to me, but I'm growing, so I guess it's okay. But God is so big, sometimes our understanding will never understand his understanding. He knows everything, right? He knows what's gonna happen. Sometimes, you know, I think I know the best, so I need to put myself aside, be a little humble, but that's a whole nother message. But think about, if it wasn't uncertain, you wouldn't need trust. If he knew exactly what was gonna happen, there's no need for trust, which is funny because we know exactly what's going to happen, don't we? God has the victory. So we should have certainty, but it's because of fear that we feel so uncertain in these situations. Because we start to believe that this situation is way bigger than God that already defeated it. Right? So, trust is actually the action of our faith. So think of it this way. Faith recognizes the chair is designed to support the person who sits in it. And trust demonstrates the faith by actually sitting in the chair. So faith recognizes that it was made for something. It believes, yeah, this chair can support me. Trust actually demonstrates the faith. It actually shows that I believe this chair can support me, right? So let's read James 2, 14 through 17. It says, "What good is it, my brothers and sisters, if someone claims to have faith but has no deeds? Can such faith save them? Suppose a brother or sister is without clothes and daily food. If one of you says to them, 'Go in peace, keep warm and well fed,' but does nothing about their physical needs, what good is it? In the same way, faith by itself, if it is not accompanied by action, is dead." So what would happen if you believe God could heal this person? I believe that. I believe he's strong like that. He's powerful, but you never go to pray for them. You never step into that faith and actually ask them, "Can I pray for you?" Because it's embarrassing. And I had to learn that in Africa too. I got up in front of many kids and I made a fool of myself, but they learned a lesson because it's called an object lesson. So that's the point of it. I make a fool of myself for them to learn. I was hard at first, but if you're not willing to be embarrassed for God, then you choose to disobey him. And I'd much rather obey God than be embarrassed or make a fool of myself in any situation. That's my goal, is in every situation. Now fear stops you from that, because you're afraid of embarrassment and what people might think of you. But that's why we know what we're fighting against. We do not fight against flesh and blood. We fight against these spiritual evils, just like fear. But we know the outcome. Keep that in mind. So let's go to Jeremiah 29:11. It says, "For I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you a hope and a future." Now this has everything to do with what I'm talking about, because I know that God wants the best for me. And think about all the people in your life that you're really close with and that you can trust with everything. Trust to give you advice, trust to give you comfort when you need it. It's the people that you know want the best for you. Even though sometimes, you know, we don't like to hear what they have to say, depending on what it is. And it's the same way with God. When he says something we don't want to hear, sometimes we think, well, you know, maybe it's not God. Maybe I'm telling myself this and it's just wrong. And then you start doubting. Then you just go on this rabbit hole of thoughts and it leads you nowhere. It doesn't help you grow, right? So I encourage you guys to think, is this biblical? If it's yes, then it's probably God. If it's not biblical, then we have a problem. But if God can do anything, then nothing's too crazy to be God. So he tells you to march around a building, you better march. Because I know that he wants the best for me, and you can trust that in all situations, God knows the best. His understanding is so big. So you can trust that he's got the whole world in his hands, right? What's that song? I forgot. In his hands, he's got the whole world in his hands. Exactly. Such a good song. There's some situations that people might say where they trusted God and it didn't go to plan. Many people get hurt by trusting God, or so they say. There's a lot of people that leave churches because they get hurt, because they trusted God and it didn't go to plan. So I wanna look at the two main situations that people might bring up. One of them is the person will give and give, trusting the Lord will provide, but they end up feeling worn. And this may look like anything. It may look like, okay, God's telling me to give my time to this person because they need it. They're going, you know, they have cancer and I'm going to bring them to the hospital every day. But then he also wants me to start up a Bible study at the exact same time for this group of people and just minister to them. At the same time, he wants me to sell my house because it's just not a good idea. And at the same time, he's telling me to do this and this and this. And then you're like, this is so much. And your spirit starts to get worn because your body's tired, your mind's tired. And when you give so much, you get to a place where you can't even receive. And that's so wearing. This is one of the situations that people tend to bring up when, well, I don't know if I can trust God anymore because of this, because I give too much. There's also this situation where the person believes that God is going to do something great through someone else. And so they sit there and be like, God will heal you. I pray that somebody, God will send somebody for you to pray for you. But I believe it. I believe he's powerful enough. But I won't do it. And then they ask why God didn't heal them. So, I was asking God, how do you find the balance of giving and receiving them? That's really what it comes up to, right? Because I'm an extreme person sometimes. And it's either, you know, from 1 to 100, or black or white. There's no gray. That doesn't exist. But, so it's really hard for me to find that middle ground. And I think it can be hard for everybody. But I believe what he was telling me was, he was like, Jesus. And I was like, you always say that. And he's like, that's the point. Jesus is the right answer. Always. And I was like, but that's not the point. I need like a yes or no answer. And he's like, no, I don't give you a yes or no answer. It's about a relationship. It's not always yes or no. It's, I want you to grow because I want the best for you. So if you know he wants the best for you, you can trust that even though it doesn't feel good now, you're gonna come out of it a new person, right? And I was like, wow, okay. But in some cases, like I was talking about, because it's a relationship, because Jesus is the answer, not yes or no, there's no formula, that you could be going through the same situation as somebody else, and your solutions, they can be completely different. Because Joshua, I think God knew that he's gonna have a hard time, you know, standing up in front of those people and be like, okay, march. When they were prepared to fight. They were getting their minds ready to go into battle. They were hyping each other up. It was okay, no. You can just march around it once and then we can go to bed and do it the next day. But he knew that that was gonna be a stretch for some of those people. But they saw what God did in the end. Because in those situations, God moves. And I had to learn that Jesus is my teacher. I was like, yeah. Because I started going to many people when I didn't understand something. And I've started reading the Bible more and having just more questions come up. And I was like, this doesn't make sense. So I go to people and I'm like, well, what about this? And they're like, I don't know. I was like, how do you not know? So I go to somebody else. What does this mean? I don't know. I was like, how do you not know? I look up to you. You should have this answer. I was like, God, why doesn't anybody know these answers? He's like, I do. I was like, oh, okay. He's like, why didn't you ask me? He's like, I did, like, write the Bible. I did do all these things. I'm the one who created the world, but I don't know those things. Sometimes I'm like, that's not logical. I created logic. What are you talking about? So I really had to learn in Africa that to go to God, especially when you're in a different environment, you're in different situations that you're not always used to. And so I had to learn very quickly what I should do in this specific situation. I didn't know what to do most of the time. So I started asking God, okay, it could be the simplest things. It's like, okay, what do I do? Do I get up right now? Okay, the first Sunday I was there, story time. First Sunday I was there, I got there, and the junior leaders, which are all the youth, tend to run the kids' service. And they have it all planned out for them so that they don't feel overwhelmed. They do a skit, they do an object lesson, a Bible verse, and each one does something different. Well, all of the junior leaders were late that day. And they all looked to me and said, do the object lesson, you're up next. I was like, Jesus, what do I do? I was like, the whole team's here. They all want to talk to me. Everybody wants to say hi because this is my first Sunday back. I was like, what am I doing? He goes, oh, it's okay. It's just about this story. And you know this story. He's like, just read it through and you got it. And I was like, okay, I guess it's that simple. And it went great. It was perfect. But then 2 seconds after that, after me, they were telling the Bible story and they were using puppets. But they're not allowed to have the kids see them come out of the puppet stage and into the puppet stage. Because the junior leaders were late, they weren't able to go up after the puppets to distract the kids. So all of a sudden in Swana, the puppets started calling my name and everybody looks at me again. And I said, what's going on? They're like, they're calling you up. I was like, oh no. And I get up there and I was like, okay, God. And he goes, just do something silly, like spin around. And I was like, oh, okay. So I was like, get up, close your eyes, spin around 3 times as fast as you can. And then afterwards, the whole team comes up to me and they're like, why'd you do that? That was really random. And I was like, so you didn't see the people coming out of the puppet stage? And they're like, no. Exactly. That's exactly why I did it. But I really had to learn that Jesus knows a lot. He's a good teacher. So trust is the action of our faith, which then brought outside turns into your testimony, which ultimately glorifies God. Your testimony starts when you walk outside those doors. It's not, I come to church every Sunday, and that glorifies God. That's not being the light. I remember singing in kids' church, hide it under a bushel. No, I'm gonna let it shine. Because these four corners hides you. The building hides you. It's when you step out into the world that you're the light. The church is to edify and encourage you and keep you going. But when you walk out those doors, you shouldn't become a different person. You shouldn't become more fearful. You should be the light. You should be the salt to the earth. Your testimony starts out there. What are you going to act like? What are you going to do? Right? It reminds me of a story in Acts 9 about a guy named Saul who turned into Paul. And a lot of people know Paul because he gave us a lot of the books of the Bible. He's a very, very smart man. I mean, Holy Spirit inspired, but he let God use him. And it was really cool. And I don't know if you guys know the story, but he persecuted Christians. He killed Christians. He was a part of killing the first Christian martyr. My bad. He wasn't a good person. But God met him on the road, and he blinded him, and he spoke to him. And he said, go to this city, and this guy pray for you. And so he goes to the city, and then he can see again. And after that, he went on the road, and he preached. And he was a part of the church in Acts, of this big movement of God, once Jesus went up back to heaven. He was a part of a big movement when they realized that Holy Spirit lives in them. He went out and preached, and he went from city to city into city. And that's the kingdom of God. That's what we want, right? But his testimony is great, because even him being such a bad person before, it shows us that no matter where you come from, God could use you. God can transform you. Just like Sydney said about the witch doctor. It doesn't matter what he was doing then. God's starting to transform him. And he will eventually be going from town to town preaching the gospel. Because that's our God. He likes things like that. That's being the light, right? So I want to share some testimonies I heard in South Africa. And I'll make this really quick because I know everybody's starting to get hungry. One of the interns there, her name is Margaret. She's been an intern for 4 years there. She grew up in Freedom Park, so she knows the town very, very well. She is now the kids' ministry director. So she's my age, 22. And she's now the kids' ministry director. She's helping the ministries. She's the lead in all the kids' outreaches. She's over the junior leaders. She's amazing. She's the most joyful person I've ever met. She's very humble, very grateful. She never complains about anything. She's a great person. And I got to know more of her story this time. And it amazed me because I don't recognize that person. Because what I would have thought that person that she was telling what she grew up as, I was not seeing the outcome that I would have expected. She should be completely different. But she wasn't. So her story, by the young age, maybe even younger, of 8 years old, her mom had gone into a deep depression because her oldest son had tried to kill her by poisoning her and actually killed the baby inside her tummy. So she went into a really deep depression and couldn't take care of her four other kids. And Margaret was the oldest of those four kids. And so before school every morning, she got up, made everybody breakfast, changed the diapers on her two youngest siblings, and then she brought her younger brother Thomas to school, and then she went to school. And then she was bullied at school because she had an albino dad, and she was too light-skinned. And that was her life growing up. And now she's the most joyful person ever. It's amazing. I love her so much. She's taught me so much. And that is somebody that you can pray for, because she does still struggle with forgiving her brother. She's really angry at what happened and that she had to go through that. And she still struggles with it, but she doesn't show it because she ministers to 120 kids every single week. And it's amazing. She's so strong. Her brother, Thomas, he's really old now. I met him last time, and I didn't pay too much attention to him, other than he was the comedian. He made everybody laugh, but he didn't really know that much English, so I never talked to him. And this time, the first outreach, it was the next day that we arrived. We did an outreach in Freedom Park, and he did one of the object lessons. And just the way he spoke to the kids, I was like, wow, he didn't used to speak to the kids like that. Like, he's changed a lot. He's grown a lot. And so I went up to him and I was like, you're doing great. You know that, right? I was like, you've grown so much. And he's like, thank you. And actually later that night, Pastor Jeff is the missionary there. He told me that a couple months ago, Thomas started working for him on the property, doing some stuff for the orphanage there. And he started telling one of the other workers, Spusiso, that I don't think I believe in Jesus because I've never heard him before. But I believe in my ancestors because I hear them. And so Spusiso started kind of talking it out with him, and wasn't really going anywhere. And so him and Spusiso, Jeff and Thomas sat down, and Jeff's like, okay, we got to talk this out. He's like, what's going on? And he's like, oh, he was so angry because Spusiso tattletailed on him. But after he got past that, he's talking to Jeff, and all of a sudden his eyes just glaze over. And Jeff goes, what just happened? And he's like, I hear them. They're telling me that you're lying to me and that nothing you say is true and I shouldn't trust you. And he said, okay, I'm going to pray for you. And so they both start praying for him, and his back starts hunching over and he starts just going closer and closer to the ground. He's like, what is happening? He's like, they're pushing me down and I can't hold myself up anymore. And so they start praying even harder. Jeff was so nervous. It was hilarious. But they start praying even harder. And all of a sudden, he sat up straight. And Jeff's like, now what happened? He goes, I don't hear them anymore. He goes, well, what did you hear? He said, I heard the name Jesus. He's like, well, who do you think said that? He's like, I think it was him. That's what he said. And after that, he's a completely different person, they said. That they don't even recognize him anymore. Margaret, she even says, it's her brother. She even says she doesn't know this person. It's like getting to know her brother in a whole different way. He was completely transformed by that. It was amazing. There's this another teenage girl, part of the youth, and she is about 14, 15. She came to both of the outreaches we did in Freedom Park, and she always had a little baby on her. They kind of take care of all the kids in their community. So if you see a little one-year-old walking alone, they pick them up and make sure that they get home. So they all kind of look out for the children. And so I just thought she was, you know, younger sibling, looking out for them. We were all holding babies that day. And she came to youth the next Sunday or the next Friday. And we started sharing our testimonies, the team, trying to encourage the youth. And she's like, can I share mine? And we're like, yeah, definitely. And she said, the farthest memory that she can remember was 3 years old and being abused, and being beaten, and being raped. And at the age of 13, she got pregnant. And all she could think about was how unloved she feels and how unworthy she feels, because this was her own family that was doing this to her, that was selling her. And all she had was the church. She had been coming for a couple months. And so she decided, she's like, well, I think I need to talk to God. So she went up on the side of a mountain. She's like, I don't know what to do. I'm too young. I'm not gonna do this, and I can't do this. And God just comforted her. And he just loved on her. And she's there every single week with her baby. And it's so inspiring because God's love just completely covered her in everything that she does. And she came and she testified, even though it was so hard for her. She could barely get words out. She could barely explain herself. But she was so secure in it. And you could see the way that she talked, that she could walk out that building and know that God loved her. It was amazing. One more testimony. This one is shorter. Maddie was another intern from Colorado there that when I was there. And the last Sunday, me and her were playing, we're going to play a song on our guitars, a Swana song. So we were like practicing it nonstop the whole entire week because we have no idea what we're saying, but it better be right. And right before service, she comes up to me and she's like, "My pinky, I can't feel it. It's like a pinched nerve, or it's numb. It's like it's tingling and it hurts. It's like burning." I was like, "What do you think it is?" And she's like, "I don't know. Can you pray for it?" I was like, "Yeah." And so I grabbed her pinky and I started praying for it. And Jeff walks in and he goes, "Is that a new way of praying for somebody? Just grabbing their pinky? Are you afraid of her hand?" I was like, "No, there's a purpose." But she comes up to me not like 5 minutes later and she's like, "Oh, it's better. I can play." I was like, "Oh, well, praise Jesus." But that's another thing about your testimony, is you have to step out and let other people be that faith for you. She never stepped out and said, "Hey, Aubrey, can you pray for me?" Who knows what would have happened? We need each other for a reason. We have the church for a reason. So that we can go to one another. We can say, "I'm weak in this area. I need help." And because of that, I have a testimony to come to. And we got to minister with our song to the church. And it was amazing. So, one more point, I'm sorry. Not all testimonies are the Saul to Paul testimonies. Some are Samuels, who grew up in the church. And God still used them. They don't have the shift in perspective that's instant, but rather learning kingdom perspective within everyday life. God still uses both. It's not one is greater than the other. These testimonies are amazing because of what they've gone through and what they are right now. That transformation that God has done that in their life is amazing. But I also have a testimony. I grew up in the church. And I got to walk in his love. And I got to walk with God right beside me, which is another Swana word. Ready for it? Wahumba Nati means he walks with us. It's my favorite song that I sang there. So that's my testimony. And I was kind of embarrassed when I got there because there's so many people that have gone through such crazy things, such evils, and now they're amazing because of God. And I was like, "Well, I don't have that testimony." He's like, "No, you do have a testimony because I still use you. And you get to do certain things that they can't do because you grew up in the church. So you're here and you've gone through what you've gone through for a reason, so that he can use you in certain situations. And that's what the body is for, so that you can do something that I can't do. And you can do something that she can't do. But we have each other and we can support and encourage each other to be that light out there." Um, So another question to leave with. Are you living your salvation in your everyday life? Are you making your faith alive by acting out and walking in the action of your faith? Are you trusting God? What is your testimony? So, I'd like to do one more thing. And can the prayer team come up? I'd like to have the prayer team come up. And anybody who has any sort of weakness, step out in faith, trust God, and come up for prayer. Who knows if Maddie's finger would have been healed if she didn't ask me to pray for her? So I'm asking you to do the same thing. I'm asking you to think about how God wants the best for you. And he's given us the church for a reason. So come up and get prayed for. Come up and get blessed. Let's come up in unity together, because we know we have the victory. We know that he died on the cross for every single one of us. We know that that's his unconditional love for every single one of us. And that anything we go through, it's nothing to him. But because of fear, we seem to cower away and hide from God and hide from the church. Some people leave the church because they're embarrassed of what they're going through. Don't leave the church. Press into it. Press into it even more so. Because you're going to grow in the end. You're going to be stronger in the end. It says you're going to, the Bible says, count it as joy when you walk through these tribulations, because you will build perseverance. So I encourage you, if you're having a hard time coming up, just sit and talk to God for a second. Build up that boldness so that you'll be ready when you leave, that you'll be a completely different person. You'll be ready to testify every single day. So, why don't you all come on up?